Call the Resources Committee to order. In attendance, we have Representatives Capsner, Gatto, Samuels, Seaton, and Ledoux. First question, has anybody in the audience flown into town today to testify on House Bill 328? And then not, we'll be putting House Bill 328 on the agenda for Wednesday, and we would not be taking that item up today. We will take up House Bill 304, first of all, from Representative Coghill's office.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Reneva Moss, legislative aide for Representative Coghill. This piece of legislation has been around for a number of years. You that have been here probably remember about 5 years ago, Representative Coghill started down this road. I think his initial objective was to close Division of Investments and put them out of the loan business, but Greg Winninger has been able to convince Representative Coghill that there is indeed a need for keeping the commercial fishing revolving loan program alive. Representative Coghill's philosophy is that government should not compete with the private sector. However, as I said, he is convinced that there is a need for a loan of last resort, but he wants to make sure that the commercial fishing revolving loan program is indeed a source of last resort. He has worked with Alan Osterman and Greg Winninger to give you what you have before you today, which sets some new limits and changes some of the provisions. Just real quickly, on page 2, line 8, we've made it very clear that a person would qualify for one of these loans if they were not eligible for financing from another commercial lending institute. Section 2 changes what used to be a rigid interest rate limit at 10.5%. It will now be the prime rate plus 2%. And for the purposes of clarifying what a prime rate is, referred to a definition which says prime rate is the lowest United States Money Center prime rate of interest that is published in the Wall Street Journal. This section also reduces the amount of money that could be loaned on collateral to 80% of collateral from the current 90% of appraised value of collateral. Section 3, under current law, the division can loan $30,000 for delinquent federal taxes. We're raising that to $35,000. And we're setting a limit for all loans combined to $335,000. Section 4 repeals language that says the department has to allocate at least 10% of their money for loans of $35,000 or less. The division recommended that this language be taken out because they never utilize 10% for those types of loans, so they have money sitting there idle that could be invested in drawing interest. And then Section 5 is the effective date. And just to go back to this $335,000, Representative Coghill believes that sometimes government has a tendency to string people along when they're failing in business. And I think you'll see an amendment here that would like to increase that from $335,000 to $400,000. Representative Coghill said what he's trying to do is prevent the continuous cycle of refinancing when people are failing in business. And I asked about the $400,000 range from Greg, and it's my understanding that most of these loans, existing loans that go up to $400,000, are not just one loan. It's a series of refinancing of loans. So the current limit is $630,000. What Representative Coghill doesn't want government to do is keep refinancing or loaning money to people to the point that they're in debt over $500,000 and still are in trouble. So with that, I would take questions.
Okay. I've got a question on page 2, lines 7 and 8. Is not eligible for financing from other recognized commercial lending institutions. I can always find a bank that's going to turn me down. I guarantee it. I've done it. I've spent most of my life.
Mr. Chairman, yes. And I think we have come to an agreement with the division that this means that a loan application would have to be very similar to the loan application that would be submitted to the division.
And it's institutions. I mean, so if you get turned down by two banks is what you have in mind?
I believe it's just one bank.
Okay. So if we change the other to another institution?
I might ask Greg to come up and respond to that.
Okay. I'm just curious on what the intent was or how you'd manage that. Are there any questions for the bill sponsor? Representative Seaton.
I guess I've got one, and that is the on page 4, line 21, where we're going to $200,000, of course, we're putting this in statute. So do you have any problem indexing that to CPI, Anchorage CPI? Because otherwise, in about 4 years, that's going to equal very little, or in eight or 10 years.
I think what I'd like to do before you make that suggestion is let people testify.
Sure.
And get their input.
Okay. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record,
put the mic,
Ranger,
mic over towards you.
Oh, sure.
For the record, Mr. Chairman, Greg Winninger, Director of the Division of Investments. As Reneva explained, we have been working with Representative Coghill's office for some time on this legislation, and we certainly appreciate his willingness to listen to the concerns we had on the original bill and some of the earlier versions. What we tried to do is to look at some changes that could be made to the program that would satisfy some of his concerns, but at the same time wouldn't hurt the fund itself. And this fund has helped literally thousands of Alaskans over the years, so we want to be very careful that that it didn't adversely impact those. I could give you a little quick background on the program. It's been around since the early 70s. Essentially, the primary purpose was to promote a predominantly resident fishery. The legislature back in the early 70s realized that a pretty big chunk of our fleet was going to have trouble accessing capital, and so they created this program to be sure that Alaskans would be able to continue to participate in Alaska's fisheries.
Have the amounts increased over time? The amounts eligible for loans?
Mr. Chairman, yes, it has. Over the years, those amounts have gone up as prices have gone up.
Okay.
So they have been adjusted. Interest rates and other terms also have been adjusted over the years. The program has been very, very successful. We've been able to help over 6,000 harvesters with this over the years. Program totally pays its own way and has since FY85. In fact, the legislature has appropriated a lot more money back out of the fund than went into it originally. So the program is not only, achieving some pretty important policy goals, trying to keep our fisheries in Alaska, but it's also paying its own way. And in fact, there's actually excess earnings now that are going back to the general fund and to pay for other programs over and above. So anytime you start talking about changes, we get concerned and we look at it pretty closely. And we have done that with the committee substitute that you have before you. And we're confident that language that you have is not going to cause major problems for the program or for any of the participants in the program.
And changing the amount you don't think causes a problem? It seems to me. I mean, what's the prime rate right now?
What is the prime rate?
Yeah.
Prime rate is at 7.5, just as of a day or two ago.
So if you're at 7.5, prime plus 2 goes to 9.5, that nobody would finance through this program if they could go to a bank. Is that true, or are there different provisions in the loans that the program does that makes it more attractive since you're paying a point more right off the bat?
Mr. Chairman, yeah, the rate that they would get at the private sector would be similar, if not a little bit higher than that. As far as other criteria, this program does have a lot of flexibility built into it so that when we run into difficult seasons, we have the ability to work with people, and so there is some advantages along that line as well, because the idea was to try and keep these permits and these fisheries in the hands of Alaskans.
And this might be a question more for the sponsor, but maybe you can answer. Are there complaints from the banking community that we're getting into kind of their bailiwick here and taking their customers?
Mr. Chairman, we have not had any complaints from other lenders, other than the Commercial Fish and Agriculture Bank has had some voiced some concerns, which is where this legislation came from. But other banks, there's been no concerns expressed.
Okay. And the percentage of bad debts on here?
Right now, our delinquency and default rate combined is about 6.5%.
And if you could explain to me one more time the Ms. Moss just talking about the constant refinancing, the problem with that, I guess I don't get if if the rate drops, then that's what you're supposed to do.
Right. Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think it would be good to clarify that the section that she's talking about relates to the total that you can get under various aspects of the program, and that's not refinancing necessarily. In fact, probably what it is somebody went out and bought a vessel, for example, and then say 2 years later they want to buy a quota share or a permit. And the way the statute is worded, you can combine those various eligibilities, and right now you can get up to $630,000 by combining those various types of programs. What this bill would do would be to ratchet that down to about $335,000. And in the existing portfolio, we actually have six borrowers right now that are over that $335,000 limit, just to give you an idea of it's a pretty small part of the portfolio. Those folks would be grandfathered in, but that does give you an idea of, you know, the kind of impact it would have.
What percentage of the people are in that range?
Six out of the entire portfolio right now, out of maybe 1,600 loans.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's a pretty small number. And they would be grandfathered in under this bill.
Any other questions? Representative Seaton?
I get of those that are over the 335 range, in what range are those loans? I mean, are they at the 650, or are most of those in the 400, 450? Can you tell us that?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, of the six loans, five of them are between 335 and 400. And we have one loan that is, or one borrower, I should say, that's over the 400,000. So the majority of them are between 335 and 400.
I was just going to ask you how your rate of bad loans, I think you said was about 6%, how that compares with commercial enterprises,
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, I don't know exactly how that compares, but I would say typically the portfolio that we administer is a little higher risk portfolio than what you'd see in the private sector. So my guess is it would be slightly higher.
Thank you.
The folks that are going to get grandfathered, those just that handful of people that have the big loans out, would they be eligible to refinance, or is the legislation going to say no, you can't, because now you have to go get another $500,000 loan? if we're dropping the rate to 9.5 from 10.5, that's the first thing that I would want to do. Allow them to do that or lock them in?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, that's a good question. That's a good question that I don't have an answer for right off the top of my head.
Okay, thank you. And the other question I've got is the same question I asked Ms. Moss. On page 2, line 8 there, would it make sense to say instead of not eligible for or from, and make it singular, another institution? On page 2, lines 7 and 8, it seems to be a little open-ended on how many banks you have to be turned down by before you're eligible.
Mr. Chairman, yeah, I guess that would clarify it. The way we have interpreted, there's some similar language already in the statute under Section C of the statute, and that's we've interpreted that you need to be turned down by at least one lender that makes similar types of loans. That's how we've interpreted it, but if you put that in there, that would make it very clear that it's the intent is one and only
okay.
One.
And I'll offer that when the time comes. If there's a reason not to, just let me know. Okay. Any other questions? Representative Seaton.
How many times in the last number of years has the legislature come back and readjusted the amount, in other words, increased the amount because there was demand in the industry for more financing capability as prices increase? Has that been every few years, or
through the chair, Representative Seaton, I don't have the exact number. I could research that for you, but it's a fairly small number of times, actually. I'm guessing somewhere on the order of, you know, 4 or 5 times over the life of the program since the early 70s.
Yes.
Follow up. If we, I mean, I hate to be addressing this in a couple more years. If we index the maximum limit to Anchorage CPI, would that, in your view, take care of the need to re-up, to increase these amounts in the near future?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, I guess that would be one way to kind of help track those amounts with what's happening out there. I hadn't really thought about that, but that would be one way to do that.
Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Representative Gatto.
Thanks. It actually goes back to your question about other or another. It's the word after it, recognized. Is that a legal term, or do we need certified or registered, or is there something that professional lending institution has to comply with that gives them a title that we would use? Because the word recognized, I'm not sure how certain that term is.
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, I'm not sure what a more appropriate term might be for that. I mean, essentially, we've just looked at, you know, all different types of lenders that make the kinds of loans that they're applying for through us, and those are the type of, so it's your major banks, the Commercial Fish and Agriculture Bank. But I'm not sure what a different term might be that might work better.
I guess what I'm asking is, if there was a term, would it apply to some but not others, and that certified or licensed, or I don't know what the word recognized means. I mean, I know in my heart, but right. I don't know in my head.
Right.
That we couldn't get around it or force it to mean something that was never intended for it to mean.
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, I see where what you're talking about there, but I'm just not sure what word I would put in at this point. But what we're looking at, the way we've interpreted that, is just any lender that's out there that does that type of financing, which is mainly your large banks, Commercial Fish and Agriculture Bank, National Marine Fisheries Service when it comes to quota share.
And I think I know what you wanted. I mean, I didn't know if a loan shark would apply under recognized. You know,
okay.
It's one of those things that you say, where can this go when it falls off the cliff? And somebody will say, listen, I couldn't get a loan from Joe's Loan Shark Company, but he's recognized, and therefore I qualify, even though every bank in the country would have given you the loan, but not that one, not that guy. So that's only thing, because I'm looking at the intent of the legislation, which essentially, according to the sponsor, says, if you can get the loan somewhere else, go get it. This is a backup. Okay, but can someone get around that?
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, I understand what you're saying. We haven't had anybody attempt that yet, but I can see where somebody might, as you say, try to use that as a way to get around the statute.
Along those lines, would this be determined, the person who got their loan rejected by a bank? You said by an entity that gives similar loans. I'm assuming that Wells Fargo, you know, a global bank, has some division in there that has these types of loans. So are you talking?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
I don't want to beat a dead horse on the issue here, but does ADA count? They don't really do that, but they are a bank and
right.
Those types of.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, if, for example, on limited entry permits, the only other lender that can make that type of loan is the Commercial Fish and Agriculture Bank. So if they were coming into us for a permit loan, we would require that they went to CFAP, because we've had people ask about how about if I go to my savings and loan to see if I can get a loan to purchase a vessel, and that's something savings and loans, you know, do not do. And so we would say you need to go to a bank that makes those types of loans.
Okay. Are there any other questions? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Anybody else to testify?
I guess.
Yes.
Greg?
Representative Seaton.
Before you leave, I just wanted to get a clarification for the discussion here on the rate of going from the 10.5, the prime plus 2. That's not meaning that your rate, that's on page 4, line 31. That's not meaning that your rate is going to change. It just puts a maximum rate on there. Is that correct? So that previously, I mean, if rates go to 15 or 20%, you could go on up to 15 plus 2 instead of being stuck at 10.5. Is that what that provision is?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, that's correct. By regulation, what we've done, the statute says that the rate cannot exceed 10.5%. And over the years, that's changed. It was at 7 at one time, and then 8, 9.5, et cetera. By regulation, what we've done is tied that to the prime rate. So the way it works now is the regulations say that the rate is prime plus 2, or in the case of product quality loans, prime minus 2, not to exceed 10.5, which is the statutory cap. What this provision would be it remove the cap. And so, in effect, it would just say prime cannot exceed prime plus 2. It would not require us to go to that, but it would say it says that we could not exceed that.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, my name is Lee Klingert, and I'm with Alaska Commercial Fishing and Agriculture Bank, also known as CFAB.
What's your name again?
Lee Klingert. And as Greg and Rineva had alluded to, this bill that's before you today is a combined efforts between Osterman's office and the Division of Investments, and then CFAB has had some input too. You asked the question with regard to whether other banks had made some noise to the issue of competition through the Division of Investments. I would say that because of the restrictions in CFAB statute as to what we can do and where we can lend, we were probably made the most noise. To say that the other banks haven't voiced concerns, I would say, probably not on the legislative front, because it doesn't affect them to the extent that it affects CFAB. One of the things that the bill attempts to do is bring, kind of scale down the powers of the Division of Investment. Over the years, the fishing industry has consolidated. The capital needs of the industry have shrunk in most areas. There are some where it's increased, but overall, the amount required to get into fishing today is less than it was, say, 5 or 10 years ago. When you have a public agency that competes with private agencies and becomes the preferred lender, what tends to happen is the other lenders just kind of turn and go and do something different. I mean, they have the option, a Wells Fargo, a KeyBank, Alaska Pacific Bank, have the option of looking to other markets, where CFAB's statute restricts it. So our focus is still on fishing, primarily with a little bit of resource and tourism. So I think the intent, I don't think, of the legislature is to make it to where loans aren't available elsewhere from private lenders in this industry. We want to keep the playing field so that those avenues are available long term. Overall, I think the bill brings the division back to some degree back to a lender of last resort, which is what its mandate was, to fill an area not filled by the private sector. It's a combined effort. We support it. We're very happy that Representative Coghill has put the time and effort into this. And I think that the amounts that are listed in the bill are sufficient based on the overall needs of the industry. And for those relatively few, as Greg explained, that it wouldn't meet, there's options available, again, with Wells Fargo, with CFAB, with KeyBank. Maybe not always at the most optimum interest rates, depending upon the market, but there are avenues available.
Okay. From Capture.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to clarify something. At the beginning of your statement, you said this was a working document between Osterman's office and I'm not sure who else.
The Division of Investments.
And the Division of Investments. Did you mean Coghill, or this is one of something that Osterman has been involved in?
Osterman's had input. They've worked with the administration. I'm sorry.
Okay. Okay, just making sure.
And do you have an opinion then on the person who's getting grandfathered in? And I realize it's just a handful of them. To them, it's a substantial amount of money. Would you be of a mind to say that they cannot refinance? Because we're dropping the maximum rate now, and I don't potentially their rate is below what the maximum is anyway. I don't know, but what would be your view on the people that are getting grandfathered in, this handful of people, the ability to refinance?
Well, I'm assuming that you're talking about refinance within the division to take advantage of a better interest
yeah.
rate. I don't think we would have any objection to that.
Okay. Any questions for Ms. Blair?
I guess I had a couple of questions. First of all, you said this bill was from Mr. Osterman and the Division of Investments?
Not proposed. From them.
Oh.
It's Representative Coghill's bill. I'd say it's been a collaborative effort between the Division of Investments, Osterman's office, or Mr. Alan Osterman, and then, CFAB has had some input on it.
Okay. And I guess follow up. The idea that lowering the limits that you have other options for money that they can go to Wells Fargo or something, I thought that the entire purpose of part of this bill is say you have to be turned down by other lending institutions. So how are you saying if we have them under this limit, constrained limit, then they have additional financing opportunities for additional capital? I guess I'm not following the requirements of the bill that you have to be turned down by those institutions before you can qualify here, and then the statement that it's okay to have lower limits because they can qualify for other. Can you explain that to me?
Yeah, through the chair to Representative Seaton. If I understand you correctly, is you're saying that you really wouldn't need a limit if they had to be required to be turned down by somebody else, and then it would go to the other lender or go to Division of Investments. And in general, with the limit of the $335,000, on one hand, that's a limit for one individual, and then if you have two people come together, that limit increases because each person would have their limit. But I would say, yes, in theory, what you're saying is correct. However, if a person qualifies for financing, you have to go back to the intent of the department. As I understand it, Division of Investments is a lender of last resort, and it's more to help the fisherman startup. Generally, somebody who can qualify for $335,000 in financing isn't going to have a problem getting a loan with another institution, depending upon the terms. Now, they may not be able to get it under the same terms they would get it with the Division of Investments, but I think you have to have a cutoff point, and up until 1995, it was $300,000 was the maximum that they could borrow. And then that had been expanded through the years because the capital requirements in the fisheries had grown. And as I said, those capital requirements have reduced substantially over the last few years.
Well, I guess,
yes.
Well, involved in is, not only tendering, but long-line halibut and black cod. And, in the last 2 years, we've seen the prices go from about $8 a pound to $20 a pound for, Area 3, Central Gulf, for my size vessel. So how do you make loans for those, and how does that, the restricting the amount doesn't seem, it's sure not, the capital requirements for the fishery that I'm involved in sure haven't decreased, so I'm just trying to figure out which capital requirements are you talking about that have decreased?
The general ones that I'm talking about are for permits and vessels. You're referring to quota. And in the quota market, there is an overabundance of lenders more than willing to finance on the quota share. The lender of choice in that area would be the federal government, who has the most liberal lending requirements or terms, and generally that seems to be the lender of choice right now for most fishermen. But Wells Fargo, CFAB, KeyBank, Alaska Pacific, First Bank, all of those, and as I understand it, the credit unions now are looking at that market as well. I mean, there's more than ample institutions willing to finance quota.
And I guess, so if someone comes to you that has a boat that's tied up in a loan and doesn't have a lot of other stuff, you will loan them sufficient amount on quota to buy sufficient amount of quota to run a business on? Or are you saying that if you have a house and if you have a boat and everything else all paid off, then you would do the collateral? Or what percentage of the quota share price at $20 a pound are you currently loaning?
As a rule, our advance rate would be 50%.
Okay, so if someone wanted to get 20,000 pounds of quota share, they're talking $400,000. So have outside collateral for $200,000, and you would loan them $200,000 without any additional collateral, just taking the quota share? Or do they have to have additional collateral for your 50%?
That we would, I'm not sure I followed what, if you could repeat that, I'm sorry.
Sure. Well, what I'm trying to figure out is how this all works. If somebody wants to get 20,000 pounds of quota in my area, it's about $20 a pound, that's $400,000. You'll loan $200,000. And is the only requirement for your loan the quota share itself, or do you require additional collateral like a boat and a house and that kind of thing?
Well, I would be generalizing. We've done it multiple ways. I mean, it would depend. You know, it's hard to define, but credit is an art, not a science. And what I would do with Fisherman A and what I would do with Fisherman B would be totally different. You look at the strengths and weaknesses of each individual fisherman, whether it be whether you take the other assets as collateral or not, but a fisherman who is diversified into multiple fisheries would theoretically be less of a risk than somebody who's only in one. So you would be inclined to do something more with somebody who is more diversified than you would with somebody who had just all of his eggs in one basket, so to speak. We've done it in a lot of ways. I mean, typically, I could say that, you know, if you ask me that question, and this is where it gets hard to explain it to people, because it's not like mortgage lending where you come in and say, if you've got 5% down and you can show me a debt ratio of X percent, well, you know, and the house is worth this, we can lend it, because you're talking about something totally different, which is commercial financing, which you're looking at those assets to repay the loan, not another outside source such as a job. But as a rule, we would advance approximately 50% of the purchase price. Now, it could be up to 100%, again, as you suggested, if they brought in other collateral to mitigate the risk for us. However, National Marine Fisheries Service, or NOAA, or the federal government, has an advance rate of 80%, loan term of up to 30 years, and a very favorable interest rate.
I guess.
Yes.
I guess my only question there is, do they have any money?
Yes.
In that term? I mean, do they run out every year?
They have had an abundance of funding for the last few years, routinely mail letters to most fishermen soliciting loans. They, as far as I know, that there hasn't been a shortage there for some time.
Okay. Not your experience. Thank you very much. Is there anybody else in the public that wanted to testify? Is there anybody else online that wants to testify? Hearing none, public testimony is closed. Get Reneva back up here for a second. There seems to be some concern with page 2, lines 7 and 8, and I'm willing to just offer an amendment that says from another recognized commercial lending institution and let the Division of Investments worry about the specifics. But I guess the question would be to the committee, do you want to hold the bill over and have the sponsor get some more specific language on that portion of it? The second question, you can answer both at once maybe, the grandfather and the ability to grandfather, would that be considered going to get a new loan? If I had $500,000 debt and I wanted to go refinance, is it going to be prohibited by the language in the bill?
Mr. Chairman, the language in the bill would prohibit any loan that, combined with their other loans, would exceed $335,000.
So you could not refinance?
Correct.
Okay.
And, Mr. Chairman, to address the concerns about commercial lending institutes, that was actually a pretty good catch on Representative Gatto's part. There is a definition for state financial institutions, so you may want to change that to read state financial institution, which means under 0605990 means a financial institution that is organized under this title or that is subject to examination by the department under this title. And the title is Banking and Financial Institutions.
Okay, and under that, then, it wouldn't just be a state, I don't know how to phrase this. Yes, some based, Northern Bank is based here. I don't know if it's a Delaware corporation or if it's an actual Alaska corporation.
Well,
Wells Fargo is not, but if all of them would be included.
If a bank is practicing the act of lending money in the state of Alaska, they are regulated under 0605.
Okay. Representative Ledoux.
I guess I was just concerned about the same thing that, I mean, I know that there are some banks that are state chartered and there are other banks that have a federal charter, that we're certain that this would include the federally chartered banks like Citibank or Wells Fargo or whatever.
They still have to go by state law too.
Okay. Any other questions for the sponsor? I think what we'd like to do is maybe take an at ease here and let's get some language together for that particular purpose on that page 2, lines 7 and 8, and see if we can get something that is going to be clear to the division and to the borrowers. So that will take a brief at ease. And what we're going to do is we're going to hold House Bill 304 over, and it'll be the first order of business on Wednesday, and we will be addressing the questions that have been brought up here, the ability, the grandfathered folks' ability to refinance, the definitions of recognized commercial lending institution on page 2, lines 7 and 8, and then Representative Seaton will have an amendment regarding inflation escalator according to the Anchorage CPI. So with that, we'll hold the bill over until...
And, Mr. Chairman, you also have a proposed change from 335 to 400 that's
okay.
Written as well.
Okay, and we'll take up all of the amendments on first thing Wednesday on the meeting. With that, we're adjourned.
Thank you.